Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Views on View. I am your host, Lindsay Wardell. With me today is Luke Diebold.
Hello from Australia.
John Leader.
Hello from Texas.
And Kale Watts-Juker.
Hello from Melbourne.
Yeah, 50% on each continent today. This is exciting. Welcome to the show, everybody. So today we have two special guests from the Viewtify team. So I'll just ask them each to introduce themselves briefly before we get into the show. So John, would you mind introducing yourself real quick?
Sure. My name is John Leader. I'm the original creator and author of Viewtify. And I have been working full-time in open source on the project since 2017.
2007, you time traveled there.
No, I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. And that's, I mean, pretty much it. I mean, I've continued to work on Viewtify full-time ever since and been growing the framework, try to get more funding and more people, and I think everything is going really well, so.
Excellent, thank you.
I remember working my tail off to become a senior developer. I read every book I could get my hands on. I went to any conference I could and watched the videos about the things that I thought I needed to learn. And eventually, I got that senior developer job. And then I realized that the rest of my career looked just like where I was now. I mean, where was the rush I got from learning? What was I supposed to do to keep growing? And then I found it. I got the chance to mentor some developers. I started a podcast and helped many more developers. I did screencasts and helped even more developers. I kind of became a dev hero. And now I want to help you become one too. And if you're looking forward to something more than doing the same thing at a different job 3 years from now, then join the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'll walk you through the process of building and growing a following and finding people that you can uniquely help as you build the next stage of your career. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com.
For those who are not longtime listeners, John was also on a previous episode, episode 110, where we were talking about some of the evolutions of Viewtify at the time. And we talked more in depth with John about his history and how he got into Vue and how he created Viewtify in the first place. Excellent episode if you want to go and take a listen. Kale, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, I'm Kale Watsuka. I've been contributing to Viewtify since 2017, and I've been on the Viewtify core team since early 2018, I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. I think I snatched you up as quick as I could.
Yeah.
So on that note, though, what brought you into programming, Kale? What interested you in that?
I've just always been into like tinkering with stuff since I was a kid, really. When I was like 8, I think, I had like a bunch of electronics kits. I just make things with that. And then I used to get old computers off the side of the road and just pull bits out and put them together until it worked. In primary school, we had this software called GameMaker pre-installed on the school computers. So I used to make little games with that. It's like drag and drop block programming. And it also had a JavaScript-based language as well. Yeah, and then I studied information technology through high school. And then that's how I ended up working with Viewtify, was through a school project.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's fun you mentioned the Game Maker. I started with the Games Factory back whenever it was that was new. And that's how I started getting into programming as well, just tinkering around and playing with games and wanting to learn. So that's a really fun path, in my opinion. I enjoy it. I should say. I'm still on the path, but I've moved along.
I got to say, I'm pretty impressed. How do you go from someone pretty much just out of high school? It sounds like you got snatched up just out of high school into the Viewtify team. How did that happen? I'm interested to hear that from your angle, Kale, and also from yours, John.
Yeah, so I graduated high school in 2016. In 2017, I was at TAFE studying IT. So I was doing a diploma and I used Laravel with Vue and Viewtify I was building a just a web app. And there were some problems with the Viewtify forms that I wasn't really happy with, so I just decided to fix it. And then I kept just contributing for a couple months. And then John was like, hey, you want a job? So then he basically hired me to work with him on client projects consulting. And then I've just been continuing to contribute to Viewtify ever since then.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I saw him, and I think, was this on Gitter at the time, or we already moved to Discord?
Yeah, I think it was on Gitter.
Yeah, because it was a long time ago. And I remember, because early on, I would spend all my time in the chat rooms trying to help people because it was not that big. It was very easy. And Kale was a strong voice. And it's often difficult to find people who can just say what they mean and drive on. And being someone who doesn't often get upset it's easy to work with people like Kale, who are very linear, very, very technical, with very little emotion, but he's smart. So I figure that he's kind of like a weapon, and I wield him. He's like the unofficial senior dev of the Beautify project, right? So he's that guy that you can just go to and you're like, all right, man, I cannot figure this out. Just go. And like, since the beginning, when he jumped on board, you know, him and Jacek and Albert, which are pretty much the original crew, Beautify wouldn't be anything near what it is without these guys. So, I mean, I was just the brick and mortar, but these guys were the ones blocking everything up. So yeah, he was one of the few people that, you know, in the community was able to just talk and thought that, hey, this would be someone that I could learn a lot from. And when I left my last job, the best piece of advice that I think I ever received was, if you want to be successful in this, surround yourself with smart people and listen to them. And I've tried to do that since then. I've tried to always just never try to overwrite anyone. And finding people like Kale, Albert, Jacek, and a few others, it's really awesome, because you get to be with people that are like way higher than it, especially me in this stuff, right? Just super, super smart. But that's like his like main thing. That's what he's really good at. And I'm good at, you know, managing and things like that. So he was just one of the early additions who, yeah, I saw, I thought it looked like a good idea. And ever since then, I've found any way possible to garner his time over the years, from hiring him to now I'm sponsoring him. And hopefully one day I'll be able to, probably never, but have all of his time.
So Kale, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like you started with Beautify in 2018, 2017. Is that correct?
Late 2017, yeah.
Late 2017. And since Beautify 2 came out in 2019, it sounds like you probably were heavily involved in that migration from Beautify 1 to Beautify 2. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I think it was like 0.15 or something, 0.14 maybe was one of the first.
Oh, even earlier than I was expecting.
Okay. Yeah.
I started with Beautify 2. So that was the date I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was, because when we released 1.0, I remember it was like a month later, Material Design 2 came out, and we had pushed the form system. This is why Kale was basically got on board. We had pushed the form system out in its current incarnation, but we had already known before we released version 1.0 that we wanted to just completely rehaul and refactor the form controls setup. But we wanted to, well, I didn't want to iterate to version 2.0 like months afterwards. So I basically challenged the team to, let's figure out how to not only restructure our forms so they are easier for us to maintain, manage, and better for users to use, but doing without breaking things. And I believe this is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Kale, but I'm pretty sure you're the one who figured out using scope slots or slots, and wrapping the components and functional components would allow us to inherit or determine everything that was coming in and say, for example, originally vSelect was, it had tags in it, it had autocomplete in it, it was like everything before we broke it out into autocomplete and combo box. So we had struggled to try to figure out how we weren't going to break and move on. And basically Kale figured out how to create a soft wrapper where we were able to not only keep everyone's application running without any breaking changes, but also give them really good documentation on, hey, you use the autocomplete prop on select now. Now you need to use this different component. And I think that was one of the really, one of the greatest achievements I think that the team had made since then. I know that it really defined a lot with what even probably happened in Vue at that point, because I believe at that time you were at least meddling with the Vue dev team, right? Like, pretty sure you were at least, I know you were at least bugging them on the boards at some point whenever you were building that slot workaround for 1.1.
I don't really remember.
But it was something that no one had done. It was something that no one had done. And it was, it literally set us up for success on so many future releases and situations, because we had this tool that we could say, hey, it's easier for us to deprecate things. Not in all situations, but in a lot. And that was, yeah, that was to 1-1. And then we spent the next, what, year and a half trying to not only release things, but also get on to Material Design 2, which, again, heartbreaking. We released in February. In March, they were announced Material Design 2. And it was like, are you serious? We just put all this time in the version. And we just released 1.0. So, yeah, it was almost like it was like fire under the sea. Like, we got to go. We got to move. And we did. We have been moving ever since.
Yeah, I was just looking up the dates to make sure I had it right. It looks like Vue 2.6 came out around February 2019, and then Vuetify 2 came out later that year in July, is my assumption.
Yeah, that was it.
What was that experience like working? Because I'm driving the conversation eventually to talk about Vuetify 3 and Vue 3.0. But with Vue 2.6, we started getting the new slot syntax, and there was more work going into scope slots and changes around that. What was the experience like for both of you working on Vuetify 2 as those slot changes in particular were happening, but any of the other changes in Vue at that time as well?
I think we still haven't fully updated everything in Vuetify 2 to use the new scope slot syntax. So people using render functions for their applications still have to do some workarounds with that because we're using the old template slot instead of the vslot directive internally.
But we have that workaround with git slots, right?
Yeah, but we're not using that everywhere. So.
No, I know. Another thing that Kale made is a workaround to be able to handle the use case that slot could be scoped and unscoped in Vue 2, which meant that in order to account for all of that, we again had to create another kind of wrapper function to accommodate our ridiculousness in the,
well, yeah,
the ways that we abuse you.
That was to support both Vue 2.5 and 2.6 because some people were still stuck on 2.5 for certain reasons.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
That's fair. Yeah, you'd still have to support the previous versions.
Yeah. So we had to have a workaround that would still read the old slot syntax and the new one at the same time.
I think that's one thing that we've usually done pretty good about in regards to now, early on in 1.0, I know that we broke stuff all the time. And
yeah, 1.1 was basically a major version that was pretty bad.
But I'm stubborn, and my motivation was and still and always has been to just, you know, make something better and keep going forward. And I felt then, and I agree with it, that we had so much to do while we were upgrading to the Material Design 2. And I had only recently at that point started working full-time with Vuetify, but it wasn't full-time like I spent 40 hours on Vuetify. I was doing quite a bit of contract work, which I was fortunate enough to have access to because of my position. But we probably had a combined total of 1.5 to 2 full-time devs between everyone waxing and waning in and stuff. So it was really difficult to say, hey, we're going to just stop and try to move everything to version Material Design 2 when we just barely got out what we had. So I just think that the fact that we were able to not only kind of push through and continue, and we still do that now, we're still releasing miners while we're working on the next big project. And I think that over time, we really fixed our issues with upgrading users, with not breaking things and being a lot better about that. Kale can probably speak more to that aspect because he worked on our ESLint plugin, which does a lot of, at least for version 2, it upgrades your application. And in most cases, you know, it pretty much gets the whole thing. It gets you either done or 90% there. And, but yeah, if you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that's something it's fairly uncommon in smaller open source projects like ours, is we have currently 3 different development trunks going on. We've got 2.5, we've got a 2.6 in development, and we have version 3 all running at the same time. And yeah, so the ESLint plugin that came fairly late, actually. I think that was like around version 2.1.
Yeah, it wasn't initially at the release, but we had a pretty good upgrade guide at that point. I think we had learned from our mistakes, and we'd spent a lot of time making sure that we caught as much as we could. But
just making sure I caught that correctly. There's 3 different development paths going right now, 2.5, 2.6, and 3.0. And that's split between, I'm assuming all of the developers are kind of working across the 3 to try and keep everything flowing. Is that accurate? What's that like on the team?
Well, right now we have, so I think we talked about this last time, but over the course of a year, a lot of open source developers will kind of wax and wane in their ability, the times they have and the motivation they have to do things, which is completely understandable. And like, for example, Albert like wrote like 75% of version 3 until we started getting in there. Like he was just popping out components and he was working through stuff and he was motivated to do that. And so we've all kind of had our hand in different places at different times. We, Jacek, who is one of our core team members, he is primarily focused on the, so Kale talks about three different dev stacks. So we have, you know, master, which is 2.5.x. We have dev, which is future 2.6. And then we have next, which is version 3. So typically what we try to do is everyone has, I mean, we pretty much put 2.x on the back burner. We still review PRs. We're not super actively making modifications in there, but we do have a developer who's kind of Jacek, who kind of makes sure that there's people that are putting PRs in for that are getting looked at and whatnot. I know Kale helps out with that a lot. The team will kind of occasionally go in and chime. But I'd say that, yeah, when you ask about split, right now dev is, it's kind of in holding pattern. So we're not really technically working on that. It has a new component and we're just kind of phase three for Beautify 3 starts tomorrow. And that's where we're handling forms. And I think we're just waiting to get a little bit of an idea on how we're going to structure things for the form controls in version 3 before we move the new component is one-time input, move that into the base of the framework. But so
for the sake of listeners, we're speaking from the past. Tomorrow is July 1st. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, So I'm in Texas. So right now it's 10:32 p.m. on June 30th. So the phase is on my time. But yeah, So we kind of end up bouncing between a lot of things, honestly. I know Kale does. And it's like a delicate balance of trying to continue to maintain other areas of the framework without getting burned out, without feeling overwhelmed, which it can be overwhelming when you look, you know, we have over 1,200 issues in the repository. For a lot of people, that can be overwhelming. So I think maybe one of the things that helps a little bit is, for all intents and purposes, we are pretty well organized. And the team, I think we have a really good relationship together. Like I think we really work. One day I wish to hire them all, the original four. That would be my dream. But just because I think that if we had four full-time devs on Beautify, like shut it down, right? But I think one of the reasons why we, you know, are able to be so efficient as a team with such a small amount, I think, is because of not only how smart these guys are, but I honestly try to get out of their way. You know, honestly, I'll throw things, say, hey, I'll throw wrenches in the situation and say, what about this? What about that? Because I'm a really nitpicky UI person. And it kind of sometimes forces them to come out of their shell to think about that. But then also sometimes they're like, no, this doesn't make any sense. We just kind of drive on. So I think that we're just really good at identifying an issue and then just fixing it, moving on, not really getting into politics of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most difficult things, I think, in the workplace, especially when you start getting new employees, to basically be able to give them something to work on and then just let them sort of jump into a hole and like just focus on that as much as they can without outward distraction. So that's really cool. I think that's great advice for all of us, you know, to be able to set somebody on a task and then get out of their way.
It's the best way to succeed.
Yeah, cool.
So let's talk a little bit about Beautify 3. As I'm sure our listeners are aware, there's a new version of Vue out, and Beautify 2 is specifically targeted at Vue 2, and it doesn't really work in Vue 3. In the recent announcement of Vue 3.1, they specifically call out a number of frameworks that are pretty popular that would not get support from the compatibility build, and Beautify is on that list.
Yeah, I expected that.
Yeah. So let's just talk about Beautify 3. Obviously, there's the compatibility with Vue 3, but beyond that, what's some of the inspiration that's going into Beautify that's changing between Beautify 2 and 3?
I'll kind of start off and pass this on to Kale to kind of expand on a few points, but to kind of summarize quickly, in Vue 2, they had a concept of mix-ins, which was ultimately a bad design pattern. They ended up removing it, but I used them like crazy. And luckily enough, I, for the most part, put everything together to where we didn't really have overlap that caused issues. at first until we wanted to expand functionality. But the motivation for version three was to take, because we have rewritten the framework so many times. Like the original version was on Stylus and Pug, and then we went to JavaScript and then TypeScript and then Sass. And so we're moving into our probably third, but maybe fourth iteration of the framework. We are so tired of rebuilding it. So one of the big things that we set out to do very early on was try to understand how our mixins would be utilized under an entirely different design philosophy, as opposed to object-based inheritance. We're now using composition functions to make the code more deliberate and to help with the expandability of all the components. So like from a distance, it's kind of like, oh, I'm applying elevation, for example. And it's the same way in Vue 3 as Vue 2 in terms of kind of how it's being applied. It's just, it looks differently. And this is to coincide with the new Vue 3 composition API, which is really wonderful for developers. And this is where I would kind of pass it off onto Kale to, you know, we do a lot with trying to break Vue. We're always trying to get inside and do crazy stuff. And I know that Kale and Albert had spent a lot of time trudging through, trying to figure out how things for our end would, because some things would convert over, but not everything. We had a lot of new concepts that we had never really done outside of the mixin portion. So yeah, if Kale, you want to, you know, talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been doing primarily with version three and Beautify.
Yeah. So one of our, everything John mentioned is sort of like an internal perspective of how it's actually developed. But from a developer using Beautify's perspective, we're focusing on cleaning up the API a lot as well. So we have a lot of props that were like added later, so they don't really go well with the original set. For example, text fields, you can have append and prepend icons. But originally, the append icon was inside the underline area, and then the append icon was outside it. And then we added append outside and prepend inside. So then they're mismatched. So we're trying to even all that stuff up, remove inconsistencies in the API. Yeah. And we're also focusing more on, now that Vue 3 has dropped Internet Explorer, we're using lots more modern technologies, resize observers, CSS custom properties. I think we're using CSS Grid in Vue Timeline now.
We are.
So that's really good.
That must feel amazing to be able to drop those restrictions of having to support IE 11.
I'd like to point out, before Vue actually made the decision, I had already decided. It didn't matter to me whether they were going to do it or not. And we actually ended up having a discussion. I think that maybe it was in Amsterdam or for VueConf Amsterdam or VueConf US. I can't remember. But they were talking about it. And I had already decided a long time ago, like, we're not, it's too restrictive. And it takes too many work hours to really support all that. And at one point, we kind of had a guy that was a little dedicated towards that. And it made it easier to say, okay, well, we can support, like we can continue to make IE 11 better on Beautify 2 simply because we had kind of a dedicated individual. But beyond him already being gone at the point to where, you know, we were deciding what the stack was that we were going to handle for the future. And I think the big deciding factor was the CSS variables, because we needed them to be able to move to the, see, we have, you know, Kale was right. I was kind of talking about the developer experience, and our view is always, we want to make it clean. We want to make it simple. And then I come in there and I try to figure out ways to, you know, can we make this smaller? Can we make this easier to look at? Like, this doesn't make sense to me, which means it's not going to make sense to a lot of other developers, because I usually approach things from a place of ignorance. You know, I'm a good programmer by being a worker bee, but someone like Kale would school me all day long as far as the best way to maybe put things or perform a specific task or action. So in addition to those, we have the entire framework is really meant to take away the need for a design choice when choosing a framework. One of the big things that people had criticized Beautify for over the years even though we did make big improvements to it, our documentation was a little subpar and people just thought it was too difficult to take away that material design look and feel. And I agree. We agreed that we could definitely do better on that. And I think that's one of the things that also kind of limited the framework to an extent was we were a material design only framework, which means that designers are probably already going to hate it because designers just say they hate material design. And so you're really just going for those back-end devs that need an interface to hook up all their data to. And basically, we wanted to make it more difficult for users to make their application look ugly while also giving them the ability to, and we're going to have some of these at release. I haven't decided on what the names are going to be yet. So for a lack of better terms, we'll say a schema. But in Beautify 3, you can set the defaults for every single component in the entire framework from your Beautify config. And in addition to this, that kind of works hand in hand with doing CSS variables. So we have a kind of a small implementation of this in version 2 with what we call the material studies. And the material studies are just a section that Google put out on the material design website that was trying to show people how you can take material design and make small tweaks and then, you know, have a different experience. It's like, oh, wow, that doesn't look like material at all. And, you know, we have an implementation there. It's okay, but it was kind of the precursor to, hey, this would be a really great feature to have. And we actually didn't even intend on doing, I think, global defaults until version 4. But with the new provide and inject functionality, we were able to do, you and Albert figured that stuff out. I just showed up and started using it. But I think that, and I could talk for days. I want to give Hale an opportunity to speak to that. And if you have any additional questions, but honestly, there is so much coming in Beautify 3 that doesn't even touch on the tooling, on the developer experience improvements, on the new support for things like Vite. And right now our dev environment for Beautify 3 is running on Vite SSR. Can you believe that? Like, that's insane.
That's awesome.
Something that Kale just figured out and then started knocking on and complaining on some developers that were running the package to fix some of the issues that we were having. And that's what we use in our dev environment now, which is great because we do SSG for whenever we deploy the website, and it's powered by the server renderer, at least that's what we do in Vue 2 for the docs. So having the ability to do that means that maybe, I don't know if we'll be able to, but maybe we can have the documentation on Vite, making it easier for us to move through it. And, you know, maybe it'd be kind of first party working with an SSG generator, which is something else that we're going to be bringing out at some point this year. So there's just a whole lot of things in the next version for everyone that I think that it's going to be like a kid in a candy store, because it's just as flexible as it's always been. But now it's way more efficient to interact with it, and it's way easier to configure. But I can dive into some of those later on, you know, wherever we want to take the subject.
I had a quick question on that, because I think this is a brilliant idea of having global defaults. That's really cool. And so with those global defaults, to what extent are we talking here? Are we talking like making everything flat, or making like just individual buttons and cards flat, for example? And does this include colors as well? And does this include like specific colors for specific components? Like to what extent do you want to take those global defaults?
Yeah, it's everything basically. Any prop that is defined on a Beautify component can be configured globally. We have a section for globals, which is like everything. So you can set flat true on every single Beautify component and they'll all be flat. Or you can say, I only want buttons and text fields to be flat. And yeah, anything with the color prop, you can set that. We also have density now in version 3. So we have 3 different density levels, which reduces vertical padding. So it removes a lot of white space, and you can set all that globally.
That was another big complaint for people was we had dense. So we had regular mode and then a dense prop for version 2 that we use now. And one of the new things that came in Material Design 2 was the concept of density, which I think they have it on Gmail now, but you've probably seen it in various applications that they say, hey, you could have a compact view or comfortable view, or maybe on some tabular data. I think that, yeah, like I think Gmail has that now, and I also tasks board. But we already kind of had dense use throughout, so it gave us an opportunity to kind of target an even smaller subset, size. And then Kale went in and wrote some magic in SAS to where not only do we support on, this isn't for all components, but this is for quite a few. Not only do we support density, which again, density, you could think of it as, you know, reducing the vertical space that a component is taking up. And the values are default, comfortable, and compact. And not only do we have those, but we also have a different concept that we had already implemented for version 2, which was size. So there's size of extra small, small, medium, large, and extra large. So a lot of our components actually support both. So you can have a compact, extra large button, or you can have a comfortable, extra small button. And everything, because of having access to CSS variables due to dropping IE 11 support, we're able to easily propagate all these changes down with actual calculations that respond accordingly. Like if I increase the size of a button, or if I increase the size of a chip, for example, something I was actually working on today, and I'm using, let's say, an avatar. Well, I don't want the avatar to stay the same size. I want it to grow. But I also don't want to have to write a whole bunch of code to say for every single density and every single size, this is what you should be. So we've figured out a way to take kind of multiple concepts. Kale mentioned the densities. We also now have variants. You know, another thing that we're trying to, we have a lot of Boolean props right now. And we're trying to kind of, it's always kind of been our thing. It's been my thing, but the API is just too large. So we can't keep having Boolean props. And we actually finalized this the other day, but if you've worked in Vuetify and you've worked with, let's say, Alert or Snack Bar, they have a prop called text. And what it does is whatever color you have set, that's the color of the text. And then the background has that same color, but with a lower opacity, right? Well, arguably tons of components could utilize that, right? But it was implemented kind of in its own proprietary way early on. And then we added it to Snack Bar kind of, you know, after the fact. But we went through and kind of looked at all the different ways that sheet components. And when I say sheet, I am talking in terms of material design, which is based off of a sheet of paper. So everything you see is essentially a sheet of paper that has some sort of modification to it, whether it's elevation or it's border radius, or it's padding. There's always these different things that are associated with it. And we came up with, I think it's five. We have five variants. There's text, contained text, plain, and outline, right? And the cool thing about that is, again, everything in Vuetify 3 is meant to work together. And because we've been able to expand some concepts out, it has allowed us to make way to do new things. For example, the text property that used to be on, for example, Alert is now an interface property that we use on multiple components where you can just say text equals and then it gets put in the component exact. I think Quasar does this in a lot of components, actually, where you're able to say title, subtitle, and text, and it'll just take the component and make sure that it gives you the proper structure. And whenever we were working with the variants, we thought, okay, well, if we can do this in a way that can be used throughout sheet, card, alert, lists, tons of components that throughout the framework in Vuetify 2 had the same or similar styles in a lot of ways, but there was some inconsistencies due to the way they were implemented. So now whenever you go in there, you know, you're not only going to have more options than Vuetify 2 substantially, but it's going to be easier to work with. And because we have everything broken down into kind of these, I call them style composables, and it's anything that modifies the visual state of a component. And we were able to, do everything that we wanted to do in version 2, but without having to implement it in a weird way for different components. So everything at its core is pretty much the same. You know, everything's a card and it has modifications to it in some shape or form. But yeah, it's essentially, there's just so many ways to combine multiple properties, and we're going to be documenting a lot of these composable functions. I'm not sure if we're going to make them public. I'm sure Kale is probably like, he's like grinding his teeth right now. But I do think that there's a benefit to not only having them documented, but potentially making some of them of a certain like category of composables publicly available because it would be useful. But yeah, everything is it's like building, it's like putting Legos together. And that's what all of our, if you look at any of our components in Beautify 3 for the most part, I mean, all the way through it is, you know, if you're working with the same thing in every single component, as far as when you're building, when we're building, and it just makes the process faster and easier. I mean, I think we've moved pretty quick since, I think when we really took off with, when Albert started, he hooked up the default props. And I think once he hooked that up, I think that's when we kind of like took off sprinting with version 3.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
Well, yeah, we've been working with Vue 3 since like February last year, 2020.
No, December 31st, because Evan released it like on the 1st of January or something like
that. No, but like during Vue 3 Alpha, we've had a Next Branch running.
Yeah,
for a since long last time. Year, early last year, yeah. And we've only really started making progress in like December.
And I want to dive into your experience, Kale, specifically with using Vue 3 and what that's been like as you build out the Vuetify framework. But just real quick, I just want to voice my excitement for what you guys are all talking about. Personally, I really like this idea of the variance, and especially as because we were talking about it, I want to bring it up, the density and the sizing. There was a larger Vuetify application that I was working on, and I had to override the SAS myself to enable my own version of density and sizing, because the client just, every time I gave them a presentation of the page, they were like, yeah, but can you make it smaller? We want to fit more on the screen. Can you just make it a little bit smaller, please? I just kept tweaking the CSS myself until I got to the point that it worked. But I think that's great that things like that are coming into the framework itself.
Yeah, it's really all about organizing and trying to find, I like everything to have a well-defined purpose, a well-defined scope. An example of something really cool that we've been able to do since we have separated some of this nomenclature is, if you've worked in version 2, you know, a lot of components have the property outlined. And what outline does is, for anyone who hasn't worked with material, whatever color is designated, so let's just say that it's a purple button and it's outlined, then the text will be purple, and then it'll also have a 100% opacity purple border around it. This is the concept of an outline. But we also have, in Vuetify 2, the concept of a border. So they don't necessarily work hand in hand. But in version 3, because they have we've created a distinction between the both, we can now give the user even more options. For example, if you want, instead of doing an outline button, say you want a different type of border opacity. And instead of using the variant, you can just use the border prop. And instead of getting a colored border, you would get the standard material design divider border color. And you can mix these things together. You can use utility classes, and everything just kind of, it works. You can still write everything out as verbose if you want, each element, and really use slots and get detailed in there. Or now you can simply use, I call them content interfaces, but if you have a card and you want to say, I want to have a title, subtitle, and text, it's a lot cooler to do it in a prop and scale the markup for them. But then when you say, hey, you can also use slots, or hey, you can still just write it all out individually if you want. So there's like three levels of interactivity that users are going to have with content-based components, things like alerts and banners and cards. And yeah, I think that the ability to be so flexible is a testament to the work that our team has done, and a lot of the, I get up here and I talk about all the flair when, Kale and Albert and Yasik are all kind of in there, in the digging through code and whatnot. And I just come around and start throwing out silly ideas. But it's because we've been able to take everything that we've done over the years and using the composition API in Vue 3, which I personally love as a developer. I'm kind of against it being the primary way that users come into Vue, but I understand that one day that'll go away. But I just, for as a developer, we've been able to take so many concepts and do things that we couldn't do before. So they were able to offer 90 variations of a component very simply without providing a lot of maintenance burden and the just working out of the box. That's the biggest thing is when people get that wow factor, when you do something and it just works and you're like, wait a minute, I don't even know what I'm doing. How did this work? And I think that's just because we offer so many ways for people to accomplish something. And, you know, in version 3, we're just making it even better.
Yeah, well, this hits on one of my favorite concepts, which is super, super simple by default, but you can opt into complexity to the nth degree. So by default, if I just want a button, it's just going to show me a button and it looks beautiful and it works the way I would expect it to work. But then I can gradually start using stuff like slots or extra attributes to kind of add in complexity to that. And it sounds like you guys are really sort of nailing that with Beautify, which is awesome.
Thank you.
So at this point, I'd like to talk more about the experience of building Beautify 3 with Vue 3. John, you've mentioned a lot the composition API. Kale, I believe you mentioned provide, inject, and the changes that were made there. So I'm just curious what the experience has been with building out these components, building out the composable methods that you're using to build the framework in Vue 3.
Kale, if you want to talk a little bit to the more technicalities of how the composables were put together, and I could come back, I can come in and swoop and talk about all the things that I made the team do that everyone hated that also went into these composables as far as how they're structured argument wise. So do you want to?
Yeah, I don't really remember what difficulties we had last year with like why it took so long to start actually making progress. I think it was mostly TypeScript stuff because we've been using TypeScript for a couple of years now. So the whole frameworks are written in TypeScript, and the TypeScript support for Vue 3 was pretty good, but there were some areas that just didn't work at all until it was like the final release. Yeah, and the provide inject stuff, that's just composition API really. You can use inject in prop defaults now. But yeah, it's mostly just easier to type than Vue 2 was.
That's fair.
Yeah, the actually, I'll make a correction. The reason why Beautify 3 kind of got pushed back so far is because of a decision that I made. During the pandemic, obviously the businesses need to take care of their employees. So the first thing they started doing is cutting unnecessary expenses. Sponsorships include those, which is why I had to make kind of a pivot on the business direction of Beautify to get it to a point to where I could sustain with my family. And I had made the decision that we already had to update the docs because they were way too difficult to work with, because I always just made something really crazily overly complex. And with the new version, I wanted to be able to just use Markdown. And I thought that we only had enough time in the rest of the year to do one. And I didn't want to do version 3 and then have to come back and update the docs in the process, because if the docs were in the state that they used to be and users were coming in and trying to contribute, it would be difficult. So because of the limited bandwidth, I made the decision to pause version 3 and focus 100% on rebuilding the documentation so that it's easier to contribute, which, you know, I still think a lot of people are mad. A lot of people message me and they're very upset. But I honestly think that it was the best decision for the long run, because if more people can contribute, which has always been our problem, then we can get more help. But Beautify, at least Beautify 2, especially earlier on, very complex, all render functions, very new for a lot of people. I think I set up the old docs to use like massive JSON objects.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so previously, every page was a big JSON file, and then each like paragraph was a separate key on that. And it was hugely complicated to add new sections, and you had to juggle between like 4 different files to add stuff. Huge pain.
It was annoying, but it had a purpose when I made it.
I was about to ask, I bet there was a purpose there for that design.
Yes.
I think it was for translation.
No, well, a combination with that and SEO, because I wanted to have I didn't want to rely on anyone to have to use the proper structure in pages. So I figured that if it was form over concept, where we say, hey, this is how you structure and have to build it, then I could take that in. I would build out the sections so the HTML was semantic, and I would stick in ads based upon some type of criteria. I think before, like if there was five sections, I would automatically insert an ad. And the point at the time was to just make that process easier, but it was very it was very monotonous to try to work on any docs. And I think that that process really turned a lot of people off from contributing.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we took a break from Feudify development basically and rewrote the documentation to use Markdown for Pages instead of JSON, which makes it a lot easier to contribute to the documentation.
Absolutely.
Are you still getting those benefits that you had by using a JSON object, by using Markdown now?
In a sense, it's more verbose, but we did some really cool things. For example, I think Kale is the one who brought it up, but front matter, it's a concept. I think it's used in some of the Vue markups and whatnot. And then we named a back matter, right? So we had some kind of default page structure elements that go into the actual Markdown template. But the rest of it is essentially, it's not difficult to, it's not as difficult to maintain. So the things that the previous structure was helping improve, not really hurdles anymore. And if you look at our pages, I mean, it's really cool how it's hooked up. We have custom components that we can put in there inside the inline markup that gets, if we put in a snippet, then we parse the Markdown and we wrap it into, you know, Beautify stuff. So it's like like Beautify Markdown, Beautify MD. That's what I'm gonna call it. But before that, we went to, was it Pug temporarily? Because you had to write something in the AST to be able to, getting bombarded from like DDoSers and stuff. Remember that? Because now, which is Versal now, their name is Versal, but remember they were shutting down version one and we had to move off because we were still on SSR. And then as they toned down version one of their system, the website started going down all the time. Remember the docs? That's why we got ODIR, the status page.
Oh no.
Yeah. And then Kale was like, we needed to go to a static environment. We had worked with the Now team, which again, they're called Versal Now, but to try to figure out how to take our application the way that it worked and have it work on their new infrastructure for deployment. Our previous implementation used the Vue SSR, a custom read SSR, right? And we had to have an active node server. And no matter what we did, we tried for months, we couldn't break it. So we were going down like once or twice a day. It was very frustrating. And we didn't have time to get to the Markdown. So we actually had to like do it like an in-between where I forget, I think it was Pug, right? Like you converted everything to Pug.
I used the Pug compiler to convert Pug into the JSON structure. So we could still do like line breaks and stuff in Pug. So it looks kind of more like a HTML page, but then it converted that all into JSON and then it read the JSON into a Vue component and iterated over it to generate the actual elements.
Yeah. And we took that bad boy and we stuffed it in our old SSR process. And instead of sending back a response from a request server, we dumped it into a file. And the reason why we had to do that was because whenever you have, I don't know, let's say we have 300 pages and 12 languages, that's a lot of pre-rendering. And it's just way too slow. I think it was at like 45 minutes, Kale, to do pre-render whenever we were testing that out before you hooked up the... Beautify is going to have an SSG plugin, just letting everyone know. So you're going to be able to do what we're kind of doing on the docs right now. But yeah, Kale was... you went in there and you're the one that figured out how to pipe that into a file because it was taking so long. And what do we get down to, like 7 minutes now from 45?
Yeah, it's pretty quick. That's mostly for multi-threading though. So it runs like 8 different renderers at the same time.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's awesome.
So are you going to bundle the threads in Beautify 3 as well so everyone has multi-threading?
Well, this is for the...
I'm just joking. Engine, right?
Specifically for SSD.
Yeah, everyone gets a Ryzen 5000 series with Beautify 3.
Yeah, that's what it comes with.
Looking forward to that patch. That'll take a while to download. Cool. As you've been migrating to Beautify 3, have there been any major difficulties? Like we've talked a bit about, you know, pandemic got in the way, obviously, and just getting up and going. Have there been any major hurdles that you as a team have run into, either with the Vue 3 changes from Vue 2 or just trying to implement any of these ideas that you've been envisioning for the next iteration of Beautify?
Well, I mean, I can kind of start off and say that one of the biggest hurdles was probably me, because as much as the team will go off and do crazy awesome stuff and will, they don't just start willy-nilly putting stuff into the code base. They still very much so care that I see it and more team members see it. And for a lot of different reasons, which we don't have to go into, but a lot of different personal reasons last year, my time was very limited. And I think that, you know, usually whenever I'm not around as much, it's less motivating for the team, as opposed to when I'm, I mean, I know I piss them off whenever I'm doing stuff. It's like a double-edged sword, right? But whenever I'm more and there and I'm working, then, you know, they feel better to be there, because there's a lot of questions that they want to ask me about what my opinion is, because even though Beautify is an open source project, a lot of the decisions that we make still has a business backend that has to, I have to keep a house over my head. So, you know, some of the decisions that we make could potentially affect that. And the team is always very respectful and just checking with me and just double checking, you know, making sure that we're making the right decisions, and they never really leave me out of the loop. And towards the end of last year, my time was very limited. And I think I even for a point of time got a little burned out. And I think that between those issues and the documentation choice that I had made that I talked about a few minutes ago, that was the biggest contributor. I don't think we were ever really blocked by the team. The team was ready to move forward. Kale was ready to put some half-assed port of Beautify 2 working with Vue 3 with some like upgrades.
Yeah, I could talk about that for a bit if you want.
Yeah,
absolutely. I would love to hear about that. I was meaning to ask.
When Vue 3 came out, they still keep support for the old options API with like data computed methods, which is what we're using in Beautify 2. So I spent maybe a week trying to get that working with Vue 3. But because we're using so many internal things in Vue, like we use render functions, we mess around with vnodes a bunch. So we're adding and removing attributes from the vnodes themselves. We even reach into like internal underscore prefixed properties on Vue instances, which you're not meant to do, but that's the only way we could figure out how to do some things.
We get pretty cavalier with it.
Yeah. So that didn't really end up working at all. So we decided to go with the full rewrite with composition API instead. I think I got like dialogues and buttons working, and then I just gave up because it was too much work.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense if you're reliant on those internal APIs. Even if the options API continues to be supported, the internal ones are bound to change, especially as things are getting changed over to use proxies. And I'm just thinking at the reactivity layer. I'm sure there's even more going on in the internals that changed.
It's right now, and the more I was kind of thinking about it, because when Kale brought this up, I very rarely try to like throw down a veto card. But the first thing that I envisioned when Kale was like, we can release a half, you know, kind of a Beautify, you know, 3 light or something like that. And the first thing that went to my mind is just the support nightmare. And I was like, I don't want to deal with this at all. But it was really cool to see what he was, because I woke up and he was like, check it out. And he was like showing like all these pictures of things working and building. And it was like, oh man.
It would have worked. We could have spent a couple months on that, but it would have still been Beautify 2 with all the bugs it still had, all the maintainability problems, and then probably more added on top of that.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have had any of these fun new features and bug fixes that we've been able to work on.
And the last thing you want to do is add more work, because, I mean, as we've been talking, you have 3 development branches going. Basically, you would have had 4.
That's not even counting all the branches that the team has just out on their own.
Oh, sure.
Well, feature branches, yeah. Feature branches don't count. We got 3 development trunks, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends upon what it is. You just opened up an issue from, like, was it issue 4,000 something? It was that old morph issue with Albert, because we were working on a morph animation for the fab. Anyways, we have a new way of doing that because I'm going to keep bragging on this dude, because I come to him with like a big thing, right? The first one was probably the Beautify loader, which changed the game, being able to tree shake the monstrosity that I had put together. That was something that Kale did. Kale also, before I get on, he actually hacked our current docs to work with Vue 2, Beautify 2, and like Beautify 3 at the same time. very, very weird, but it works. And one of the, I think, you know, now that I think about it, Kel, I think the big turning point in version 3 was when you got JSX hooked up. I don't think we don't talk about this enough. I mean, not only is the JSX support work really amazing, but it was one of those things that Kale did against, like, I was like, nah, and he just went and did it and he got it working. And it was like, oh my God. And it literally, I think it changed our motivation on version 3 just simply because it felt easier to approach. It was a little scary approaching version 3 where it's all this new stuff and then we're trying to use render functions. It's like, how do we apply these different logices and how do we make it simple enough so people can help and support? And that answer was JSX. And I mean, I'm sure that it has maybe some pitfalls. Nothing of it really bothers me. Everything that we do works really, really great. And it makes it so easy. I'm really excited to see when people look at the code and that want to contribute and being able to just really understand what's going on and having different aspects that, yes, JSX is a little different. There are some new concepts to it, but you're basically writing HTML. I mean, it looks the same. And after a little while, you actually start to appreciate it with how much effort the team has put into our typings. We have type support all the way down into the JSX templates. So protecting us from making mistakes. And this is just like some of those things that the team will just go off and do sometimes, even if, you know, I don't think it's a good idea, and they'll just do it and show a proof of concept. And if everyone likes it, we drive on. You know, I was wrong, you were right, let's put it in and let's go. And that's usually what something like some type of inflection point happens where some big discovery will be made. And then everyone on the team is like, okay, this all makes sense now. Like, this was the thing that I was kind of blocked behind. I didn't know how to approach, but you solved this one problem and now I'm good to go. And I think it was JSX and then the global defaults. And then ever since then, everyone has just been, mainly Albert at the beginning, just going nuts. Like, wrote the whole damn framework at the beginning. Like, I just give them all the credit, but I think that those points were really big for the team to say, okay, we like this direction and we feel comfortable with it, which I think was the biggest thing, because we don't want to mess it up. We don't want to have to rewrite it all again. And that's both a blessing and a burden at the same time, where we want to get something out, but we want to make it good. There's a certain level of, I think, why Beautify is successful, of attention to detail, which people look for and care about. And if Beautify 3 comes out and it sucks, people are going to remember that. And that's why, you know, we do have a release date in October and we are on track for that. But it's why we've ended up having to push back basically a year, because we didn't feel comfortable with it. It didn't feel great. We made a lot of, you know, like Kale said, we worked in the Vue 3 alpha, like the moment it was out, we were really stoked and excited. I'm pretty sure this was right before ViewComp, Austin, but there was just a lot to learn, and Vue 3 was still kind of in its infancy. So I thought, you know, okay, we could push it back. But I think that people are really going to be happy when they see what the final product is. Simply, I find it very difficult to see how other frameworks can compete when Beautify can have any designer style, and we're going to come out with them on release. So I think that those kind of massive, amazing features wouldn't happen if I wasn't able to go to the team and say, hey guys, I really want this dialogue to animate from the button. I want it to animate from the button into the middle of the screen, just like I see in all the pretty material design videos. I haven't been able to figure it out for 4 years, Kale. And about 3 days later, he had a prototype working that's already out in alpha. And it makes me excited every time I see it. Because it's like the team put this together and now someone else is going to get to use this. And I was able to just, hey, this is what I think would be really good. I think it was I had an app called Tasks Board and they had the animation and I showed them, I was like, this is what I want. And it looks exactly the same. So you can't do that if you think that you're smarter or better than the other people. The best thing to do is let experts do their work and just step out of the way. Keep their mind working, keep throwing things out. What about this? What about this? What about that? And, you know, since we've worked with each other for so long, there's no lost love. No one really gets hurt or offended. I think Kale used plenty of explicitives to me today. And it's always fun working together because no one really gets offended. We all really enjoy working on this. And I think that, again, that's why we are so efficient with the, and when I say we have lots of community help, I don't want to disparage on the community help, but as of right now in Beautify 3 in early alpha, it's really a core team effort. And really only two or three of the core team members are very proficient in Beautify 3. So we get the only way that we've been able to and will continue to be able to keep up with the pace is, again, letting people be experts in their field, trusting them, and don't be afraid to make a decision. And yeah, it's just from my perspective, I get super excited all the time because some of these things I can't figure out. Like I have no idea. I think yesterday I was asking, I don't have higher level math. So I was like asking the team, like, I got to figure out how to make this negative integer a positive one with our density modifier. It's like 3 seconds and they were able to solve it. But I'm sitting there for like 30 minutes scratching my head because I don't even know what to ask for. So being able to come out and say, hey, Kale, I want a gorilla. And he brings me a whole jungle. And it's like, yeah, it's exactly what I wanted. So I just think that that's what makes the team a little special and why we're able to kind of do some of these amazing things. So
awesome. Well, thank you both so much, both you, John and Kale, for coming on the show, talking about Beautify, where it's been, where it's going. I can tell you, I'm excited for Beautify 3 based on our conversation. I've got a couple projects that I'm going to upgrade as soon as it's available, and I'm happy to wait. Whether it's going to take another year or if it's going to come out this year, whatever it takes, because I'm excited for how this team works on this project.
Yeah, I think the only thing that the team has, like, because we have a clear path for phase 3 with the form controls. Like I have a pretty good whole thing put together for the team, and we've been talking about it for a while. I think the biggest thing is, and we're not going to break October. I think that the biggest risk that we might have is calendar may not be ready. It'll depend. And the main reason why is not only because it's so big, but the developer that primarily headed up and helped a lot, he's starting a new family and he's just really busy. He's unable to, you know, put in the time. So, but really the idea is that if it were something like that to happen, where we would not be able to release with a specific component, you know, people would know well beforehand and whatnot. But as of right now, it's October. I mean, we are on schedule. Tomorrow is phase 3. We are starting. So, you know, the timeline to October, I think, is looking really good.
I will have my finger on the upgrade button as it comes. Thank you so much.
Hey, folks. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
At this point, we will move on to picks. Picks are the part of the show where we share things that we like with the community. They don't have to be programming related, but often are. And I will start today with Kale. Kale, what is your pick for us today?
My pick is the next upcoming book in my favorite science fiction series, The Expanse. And that's called Leviathan Falls. And I believe that's releasing in November this year.
I better get caught up then. I just finished book 3 and I'm waiting on the library. I may have to start purchasing things so I can be caught up in time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. John, do you have a pick for us today?
Actually, I did. I know we talked earlier, but something that I have started using recently, a piece of technology is called Shift. It's tryshift.com. And it's basically a productivity tool for being able to have multiple different applications across from, you know, Figma, Spotify, just a regular website, email, calendars, and stuff. It's kind of all built into it. And it's the first kind of application that I have used for the purposes of kind of you know, I have like a specific Beautify thing that has all, you know, business related stuff. And it's like an advanced bookmarks, you know, and I have it and I can share it with other people. And it's a really cool application. And I've been trying to get the team into using it. And I would definitely, I mean, I'm not sponsored by them. If they hear this and they want to sponsor me, I'm available. But I'm a really big fan of the software. And so, yeah, tryshift.com. Check it out.
Awesome.
This looks really cool.
It's amazing.
So it's kind of like, is it kind of like an alternative to an alternative browser that uses Chrome under the hood?
In a sense, it you can still bring things out of it into a regular browser. It's actually very intuitive like that. But you can do anything from creating a workspace where you just have a bunch of, I have a workspace with a whole bunch of tabs on it that are all the frameworks.
Well, it's tabs for like other applications, isn't it?
Well, they have that as well. So you can do bookmarks. You can do, I use Spotify and Figma. They're built in here, YouTube, and then all of my emails, because I have multiple emails and all of my calendars and everything just built into it. And they have this list that is so large with so many applications that it's even fun just to use to find new apps, because they have a really good organization of it. And you kind of go through and anything from, I think I got Zapier, Notion, Shopify, Zendesk, GitHub, all these things kind of built in. And it just, I don't know, it works really good for me. You know, I have a lot of areas that I have to touch where we're at in Beautify right now, and it can become overwhelming, and it's been a good pick for me. So check it out. I guarantee you'll probably like it.
I'm downloading it right now.
Everyone should check this out. This looks awesome. What I like about this is I feel like a lot of products these days are trying to be the one product that replaces everything kind of thing. But the reality is that's just never happens. And so it's really cool to kind of have like a workspace of those products that you use, which kind of looks like what this sort of does really well.
Oh, yeah.
It sort of brings together all of the tools for a certain thing that you're working on. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when your bank has like a little connection API where you can say, hey, I can log in with my bank, and they have like this little transaction where the companies had to figure out how they're going to translate that together. And it's kind of what they do here. They don't try to take over what you're the application. They're like, oh, okay, we have this special Shopify integration. It's just utilizing, in some cases, the websites, in a lot of cases, some applications, but they do it so well that you don't even really, it just feels like you're, it's just in an application, but all the websites, you know, it has things like you can have multiple workspaces with apps, and you can say, hey, keep this updated every duration of time so that those are always updated. Or, hey, this one, you can go into hibernate mode and don't update any of this information in this tab unless I click on it. So it's more performant. And it's just, it's one of those apps where I went in and I just did the thing I always do. And I don't read the documentation. I just started using stuff and it worked. And for me, usually when that happens, I found something good. So yeah, let me know what you think. I think I paid $100 for a whole year subscription. Like, can't beat it at all.
I think it's really interesting that there's a number of tools like this that are coming out right now, trying to bundle our workflows into a single app. In a recent episode with Titus DeCalli, it was episode 153, his recommendation was Sidekick, which is very similar. It's a browser made for work where you have tabs on the side for different tasks. And their examples are like Slack and Notion and Figma, things like that. I think it's really interesting how, I mean, we see this in other places where tools get built in their own silos and then a tool comes to put them all together. I think the quintessential example I can think of is like Trillion, back when we were using AOL Instant Messenger and Yahoo Instant Messenger and just put it all together in one. I just think it's fun that we're seeing that again.
You just made me think of like a flashback. Trillion, I was like ICQ, MIRC, AOL Instant Messenger. Like I was just, then the 56K modem sound started happening and here we go.
Good times. Luke, what is your pick today?
My pick today, I don't know if I've chosen this one before, is Pinya. And Pinya is basically an alternative to Vuex, but it's written by Eduardo, who's one of the guys on the Vue core team. And he actually helps develop the new Vuex 5 API, which is really, really cool. So basically, Pinya is kind of like, at least how I like to think of it in my head, it's kind of like what Vuex 5 is probably going to look like. And so he's taken a lot of the ideas from the RFC for Vuex 5 and built this this state management tool. And I've been using it a little bit and absolutely love it. State management is so much easier than it used to be. And I think people should check this out because to me, it's a good way to get a taste for the future of state management. So like state management, how it is right now, where you've got your actions, your getters and your mutators. A lot of people know that they're trying to kind of merge actions and mutators into one thing. That's, it looks like, at least from my perspective, that's changing. And Pina is, has done a really good job of showing what that future is probably going to look like. Yeah, so definitely check that out. And also spend some time trying to roll your own with the composition API because it is ridiculously simple once you figure it out. Yeah, so that's my pick, Pina.
That is an excellent library. I second that recommendation. One of the other nice things about it is rather than have separate, like in Vuex, you have separate Vuex modules, you just create separate stores and you just import those stores separately. So you're always very explicit about what data you're trying to access and what you're trying to do rather than having one global store that has a whole bunch of smaller stores inside of it. That's something I really like about Pina. So my pick today, as soon as I find my tab again, is something that was just announced from GitHub called GitHub Copilot. And I'm mostly sharing it because it looks really cool. I'm looking forward to trying it myself. But GitHub Copilot is basically, they describe it as your AI pair programmer. The idea being you start writing a function or you start writing out some bit of code and Copilot will recommend what that code should actually look like, what it should do, how it should be structured. And they note that it should be, it's trained on billions of lines of public code, which probably means it's trained off of Stack Overflow to some extent. But it's just bringing code snippets into your code. I think that can be extremely useful as a new developer because you're getting that help. You know what you want to do, you just don't know necessarily how to do it. You can get an idea. If you're a more advanced developer, you know exactly what you want to do. You know how to do it. You don't want to necessarily write it. And so it's helping you again. So I feel like this is going to be a great tool. I noticed that Scott Polinsky, it sounds like he's been using it and he likes it. And I take that recommendation and I'm looking forward to it myself. You can sign up right now for a technical preview. It is there is a wait list. I am currently waiting at copilot.github.com. Looks like they support a number of languages. The examples they show are in TypeScript, Go, Python, and Ruby. So, but their end goal is to support all the languages that they can. So everything should be supported eventually. Just looks really cool.
Looks interesting.
Awesome. At this point, we'll move towards the end of the show. John and Kale, where can people find you online so they can continue this conversation, ask any follow-up questions that we didn't think of during the discussion?
Go ahead, Kale.
Yeah, I don't really do social media that much. So I guess just on the Vuetify Discord server, community.vuetifyjs.com. And I'm just at the top of the list there, Kale.
Excellent.
Otherwise, I guess Twitter, you could DM me on Twitter at KaleWD.
The keeper of the grove.
I mean, it's perfectly fair that not to use social media. I will admit my primary usage is during compiles.
I'm at the same place. I'm on the community.vuetifyjs.com. Right above Kale. We have a V3 discussion channel that you can hop in and talk with us. And you can find me on Twitter. It's at Zero Skills, ZeroSkillz. And feel free to reach out to me there. I'm not big on social media, but I do it. I geek out about Vuetify. So if you want to talk about something Vuetify related, obviously hit me up. Or you can watch me show the progress of the new Vuetify office being built right now. So yeah, follow me and check a look.
Excellent. Thank you. Hope you all enjoyed this episode as well. You can find more from us at viewsonview.com or at devchat.tv. You can also find us on Twitter at viewsonview. You can find myself on Twitter at Lindsay K. Wardell. And you can find Luke on Twitter at Luke Diebel. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. We'll see you again next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.